Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No, I'm...
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. More confident than United before a Europa League final. Gamble responsibly. See dunluey.net.
All right, that part of the evening that I always look forward to, I have to say, I'm delighted to have your company as well this evening. Adrian with you between now and 10 o'clock, and lots to come. We're going to catch up with Andy Mitten in just a little bit. Obviously, all things United on the agenda there, including the news this evening, late this evening, that Jadon Sancho's move to United seems to be back on in a big way. They've agreed personal terms, or at least they've agreed to agree personal terms, and they've agreed to agree all the little bits and pieces, the nitty-gritty around the agent's fees as well. So it seems like a couple of massive hurdles crossed there. But before all of that, delighted to say Mark Lawrence joins us on the line. Evening, Mark.
Hi, Adrian.
How are you getting on?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks very much.
Bit of a mad time in the UK at the minute.
It's mad when you think the football season starting on Saturday, and it just so doesn't feel like it is a football season. But hey, it is what it is. But at least we've got football.
We've got something to take our mind off all the other madness.
Yeah.
On that point, Mark, the it is normally the sort of this time now we'd be on and we'd be looking forward to the new season, and I'd be saying something to you like Liverpool have had sort of 2 months or more to chew and stew over having won the Premier League title first Premier League title in such a long time, first Premier League title ever, but first league title in such a long time, and they've had all that time to chew over it and to celebrate it. But given the dynamic of everything that's gone on, like that hasn't been there, they haven't had that celebration of it. Does that impact, do you think, on things like hunger to retain the title, given that it's been such a short turnaround that it's almost feels like a continuation in some ways of last season?
I think it will help. I mean, we all, generally most people saw, or if they didn't see, saw glimpses of the trophy presentation. And obviously, while it was extremely well covered, it's not just the same like anything without spectators. And I think one thing that would arguably drive the team on this year is to go and try and win it again, and if possible, win it in front of spectators most definitely, because it's not the same experience, certainly when, you know, your last however many games, there's nobody watching the games, well, apart maybe from 200, including journos, etc. So I think it will definitely drive Liverpool on, indeed.
Yeah. And I suppose only time will tell on it whether that's actually going to be the case or not. Just in terms of the importance last season then of wanting to win the Premier League and going ahead and doing it, it was very clearly a top priority for Liverpool, despite bagging most trophies that were in front of them. Does that remain the top priority, Mark, in terms of what the club... I know they'll say they want everything, but does that remain the top priority, or now that the famine is over, does it revert back to the Champions League?
Well, I think first and foremost, Adrian, to make sure they're in the Champions League, obviously, for the start of next season, as it were, so that's the most important. I don't think any team... around anywhere at the moment can say that, you know, they have a priority of winning what particular competition. I just know always in our day that we'd be in four competitions, and if you won one, great. If you happen to win two, fabulous. And if you won three, you were lucky. So they don't sit down and say, right, we've got to win the league again. But I think they are driven to do so because, obviously, 2 years ago, they finished 1 point behind with 97 points, which is absolutely incredible, as everybody was aware of. Last year, they decimated everybody in terms of the opposition. But they do know that this season it's going to be far more difficult because City have strengthened, Chelsea have definitely strengthened, Manchester United. There's still lots of time as well to go before the deadline. Is listening to you there, sounds like Sancho will eventually probably end up at Manchester United. It does make me laugh, though, the fact that, you know, they sorted out his money, etc. But the AMTAX is sorting out how much he's going to pay at Dortmund, because if Dortmund says he's not going, he ain't going anywhere.
And that seems to be certainly their stance at the minute. Anyway, the lines that are being fed from certainly from some of the journalists that I see on the beat this evening is that Sancho will need to go to the club and tell them that he wants out, which is the usual sign you see before some further movement starts. But we'll keep a watching brief on it. Anyway, do you just because with those other clubs then strengthening, Mark, do you expect like the tallies that have been built up by Liverpool over the last two seasons? Do you expect that those monster numbers of points, is that just something that gets levelled a bit now as the other teams begin to build a bit?
Yeah, definitely, because I do think, you know, I mean, obviously you said Manchester United, well, all the others are stronger, quite honestly, including Arsenal. So I think they're going to take points, more points off each other. And it's, you know, we live in a surreal world, as we know. We don't really know when spectators will be back in the stadiums. They keep saying October, but, you know, I mean, they're supposed to be, I think, spectators at racing at Doncaster today, and I'm not sure that there was. I think that's just going to be a wait and see completely. So that will also add to the strangeness, I should say, of the season. They're also going to be playing on a really regular basis. But to be honest with you, Adrian, the top four or five teams in the Premier League, they will be doing that anyway because they're in every single competition. But I just think it will be far more difficult for Liverpool to win it. My great worry about them is that, you know, the front three, when you look at the last 3 years, they've hardly ever been out of the team with anything like a 2-3-4 week injury, maybe occasionally, but it's a staggering statistic. So slightly worried that one of the three might get a little bit of a long-term injury, and I'm not sure. Origi, I don't think he's anything like the front three, which is quite stating the obvious. And there's no one in there at the moment that you think would actually step up and be as good as them. So that's my greatest worry for Liverpool. Don't worry about them defensively too much. Midfield, they've got a lot of players in there, all a little bit different. But if one or two of the strikers is out for 3 or 4 months, I think that would be a massive difference to the club and the team.
Yeah, like, and even on that point, because it doesn't seem as if there's any great thirst to bring too many in, and maybe some going out, but the in terms of those, that strength and depth then, because you look at, if they're not going to bring in many players, then you look at what's around you, and people talk about Elliot Jones, Rian Brewster, obviously his name that comes up very regularly, and he particularly seems like somebody who would be a viable option, but by all accounts it seems like they're willing to let him off and that the clubs are queuing up to take him. Like, it doesn't seem like a smart move if they're going to let him away on a permanent deal.
Well, no, I think what will happen if they do, there will be a big clause in there which will be that they'll be able to buy him back at a certain fee. And I think that's actually quite clever, because that just sounds to me as though Klopp's not convinced yet that he could be a real top Premier League player. I mean, a Premier League player, absolutely. A good Premier League player, definitely. But a top player, because that's what Klopp's really interested in. So I think it's a really shrewd move. And the other thing as well is it would mean that he's going to have loads of experience, whereas at Liverpool he's probably sat on the bench nearly every week. He's got to get it in front of, well, not just the front three, but people like Origi, Curtis Jones, etc. So, you know, lots of Liverpool fans are saying the kind of, well, he's not bought anybody, and we've not got this, and we've not that, got that. But you've got to trust the manager. I mean, the manager has just improved every single year, and he is prepared to wait. The players, I think Nobby Keita was going to be a big player for them this season. He showed signs towards the end of last season that he's actually settled down. His English is far better as well, communication, etc. So he'll be a bonus. Would it be a big blow if Ronaldo went? I don't think he's irreplaceable. And to be quite honest with you, they'll probably go and buy the boy from Bayern Munich if he thinks that Ronaldo's going to go to Barcelona. So he's also very keen about these kids, and I know they are relatively experienced, but who are you going to get, Adrian, that's going to come and seriously challenge anybody in a key position at the moment? Because they'll be able to go to other clubs, you know, probably clubs that are playing in the Champions League. So I think Klopp's studied it, and he's got, you know, Harvey Elliott and Curtis Jones, etc., Nicole Williams and all those kind of boys. They've all had a little bit of a go. And they've all actually done really, really well. Now, we're not talking about relying on them week in, week out, but I wouldn't mind betting by the end of the season, one of them will have played a lot of games for Liverpool. And I think also in terms of the club, I think they're trying to get the debt down. It's not massive, the debt, but I think they're trying to manage it. a little bit, and they are extremely worried about where everything's going with COVID. I think I don't know whether it was FIFA or UEFA were saying that they think transfers in the next 2 to 3 months, whatever, however long that will be, might even be 30% down. So, you know, so I think Klopp and Liverpool are just playing this waiting game. And I mean, they've got a few weeks yet anyway to do a deal if they really need anybody.
Yeah, Thiago Alcantara obviously is that one that sort of keeps getting mentioned. It just struck me as you were talking, like somebody who could marry the prudence of an Arsene Wenger with the success of an Alex Ferguson, like that's the dream manager right there. They're going to earn themselves some top dollars.
Yeah, well, I mean that's the thing. It's not kind of blinking. How long can you hold the stairs? So the one thing about Liverpool which is massively improved since Jurgen Klopp has taken over is the recruitment. It's the recruitment, and not only the recruitment, it's also his ability to make good players very good, outstanding, world-class. I can't think, apart from maybe Loris Karius, anybody who he's bought that's actually not done well and not gone on to be a far, far better player. So, and I think he quite likes the challenge of improving these players as well. So from that point of view, plus in terms of, you know, bringing all these players in. I mean, the guy in charge of bringing all the players in has done a fabulous, fabulous job. Yes, obviously Klopp says, let's go for him. But even so, you know, what they've got to do, the recruitment people, is they can probably give him four names. You know, this is number one, two, three, four, and let's see what we can get. Because obviously sometimes you can't get the fella that you want because somebody else comes in and pinches him off you.
Yeah, and he's bought himself like an unbelievable amount of leeway as well, Jurgen Klopp, before people started to... I don't know what would have to happen before Liverpool fans started, or the board started to question what Jurgen Klopp is about. He's bought himself some time on that front. Just in terms of like Liverpool's style, Mark, and the way they play, like, I mean, I think everybody accepts now the way that Liverpool play and they understand it like pretty deeply, I would suggest. But at the same, like, and it's been known for some time. At the same time, like, there's very few teams that can manage to rattle that Liverpool team. Never mind to beat them. I know, like, Watford obviously was the sort of standout in every regard blip maybe last year. But given that all that exists, have you been surprised like that teams haven't been able to find a way around them? Or do you expect, like we mentioned about the extra bit of quality, that Chelsea and potentially City, certainly United, Arsenal are going to add in? Is it just a case that those teams know how to beat Liverpool but haven't had the quality, and if they can sprinkle some of that in, it'll be an altogether different proposition?
Yeah, I think it will. I mean, everybody knows the way that Liverpool play. They play with the front three, but the two wide boys in the front three push in and the full-backs bomb on all day long. But I'm just thinking, if teams are better and have better quality and have more of the ball, obviously they're going to have more attacks and they're going to be able to stop Liverpool a little bit easier. I think what's going to be difficult, though, they just play at an unbelievable pace. And I think it's very, very difficult to teams when they're playing against Liverpool, because they feel at times that they just can't get out of their own half. And in the end, of course, they start making mistakes and Liverpool start to pick them apart. But I don't see them having the steamroller effect this year. I think it's going to be much more difficult. They'll still win an enormous amount of games, but they might draw one or two others. And, you know, we said before, I don't think the points tally is going to be the same. But they won't change Liverpool. They'll change nothing about it. You know, even now in pre-season, they've had, you know, one, two, sometimes three sessions a day. They've been in Austria. He works them extremely hard. He does not give them an inch, Jurgen Klopp. He tries to make training, you know, as enjoyable as it possibly can be, but it's always, always competitive. And they've always got this edge about them, which I think, you know, is very, very difficult for teams playing against them.
It's a cracking game to get things underway for Liverpool, isn't it, this weekend? It's one to really look forward to, because everybody's so excited about what Leeds might be able to bring, and no better team to be playing, I suppose, and every incentive for that Leeds team, who ran away with the championship, very different quality, but ran away with the championship last season. And a great opportunity for them to test themselves against the very best.
Yeah, and I think they'll be fine. I don't think they'll be caught in relegation at all. But they're a little bit Liverpool-like in the way that they press you. You know, Bielsa, another, you know, in terms of the manager, is like Klopp, which is always got to be at you, always got to be at you, always probing for a lack of concentration or a mistake. He looks like he's added a couple of players as well, the guy up front as well. He's the big one, really, because if I can't even remember his name now, he'd be signed for a lot of money. But if he can get up to off to a good start and scoring, that'll make the difference to Leeds. Hernandez, who is, I don't know if you've seen much of him, the guy, what, he's about 35 now, isn't he? What a fabulous player he is. He's great, but he kind of only comes on for half an hour, but he comes on when teams are quiet. But the super fit Leeds, and the physical, and they play the game at pace, I really do think that they'll be absolutely fine, and we're all kind of looking at the manager, and he's obviously nuts, he's completely barking mad, but I tell you, what a man, no stone left unturned. And his players seem to absolutely love him.
Mm. Yeah, they're bringing in this guy, Somerville, from Feyenoord, as one of the players. They're certainly doing a bit of business, and everybody's bought into him. It'll be a fascinating game to watch on Saturday evening. For all the sort of stability that we talk about in terms of Liverpool right through the club, in so many ways, it's almost the exact opposite at Manchester City at the minute. We had all the Messi stuff going on over the last while, and the uncertainty about Guardiola. Does he stay? Does he go? Is he motivated enough? And there's still a lot of uncertainty there, Mark. What's your expectations from City for the season ahead?
I think they challenge Liverpool for the title. Obviously signed Nathan Ake. I think the biggest mistake he's made in all his time there, Pep Guardiola, was not replacing Vincent Kompany. It was obvious to everybody that he needed to be replaced. He lost 9 games in the league last year, City. I mean, you couldn't have got a bet on that at the start of the season. I think he's extremely motivated. And we have to remember with City, you know, the two Spanish guys who basically run the football club, they waited for Guardiola. They waited while he went to Munich. They waited while he went and took a year off, I think, in New York and stuff. He was always going to get there. So they will back him. I think the only thing I think this will be his biggest season so far. He's been average in the Champions League. He made a strange decision when City got knocked out and decided to play 3 at the back, which was very, very odd. That's a very un-City-like approach, because you know they're very much tear at you. They've got brilliant midfield players, as everybody knows. He's a better midfield player in the world than De Bruyne, I wouldn't have thought so at this particular time. So it's a big season for them, but he's got quality. He's got massive quality, and they've got, you know, they can just sweep teams aside if he can just stop that inconsistency in terms of defensive and sort of conceding so many goals. I think they've got a really good chance of winning the league. But at the moment, I would just have Liverpool ahead of them. But then you never know with City. You know, the next 2 or 3 weeks, you never know who they're going to go and sign.
Yeah, and they'll probably be. I haven't seen too much about it in the last 24 hours after England thing wrapped up. But Foden obviously be a player that might be missing for the first little while. But we'll see how all that pans out. And then United... Mark, what are you thinking in this? Like, they obviously have brought in Donny van de Beek, and there's a huge amount of excitement about him. I saw one headline this evening suggesting that this guy could be the signing of the window, and we've mentioned Jadon Sancho. Is that enough to make United contenders?
No, I think they need another centre back. To be honest with you, I think United will win a lot of games. My only worry about them is, you know, they play 4 or 5 games and look real quality. They've got some outstanding players. They've got loads of pace. They've got goal scorers everywhere. But then they go missing on days. You cannot win the Premiership, the league title, playing that way. It's just got to be every single week. I'd have them third in my table. But they will definitely improve this season. And I think when they're playing well, they're as good as watch as anybody in that division, and they're a very difficult team to play against with all that pace that they've got.
Yeah, well, it'll be fascinating to see. You're saying Liverpool to win anyway, and then City, maybe, by the sounds of things?
City, Liverpool, City. I'll go Liverpool, City, Manchester United, and Chelsea would arguably be my top four. Chelsea are really interesting because they signed all the forwards and were saying, well, that's all right, but, you know, you need to close the door at the back, and all of a sudden they started signing defensive players, and straight away you can see you know, the bare bones of a really good side there. But how long it takes them to gel will probably decide where exactly they will finish in this league.
Yeah. Before we let you away, I see there's been a milestone birthday in the Lawrenson household over the last week.
My son.
Yes, 21.
Yeah. Well, 20. Well, I'll tell you what. He was 21 on Sunday. What day is it today? Wednesday. I've had my first conversation with him today, so you can imagine what state he's been in. I mean, he does love a beer. He plays rugby, and he does love a beer. I thought he'd emigrated for 2 days. I couldn't get hold of him. But it's all good, yeah. 21, where's that gone? Frightening.
That's what you do, Mark. It turns out, if we're anything we can take from the last few days, that's what you do when you're 19 or 21, that you go and enjoy yourself. Exactly. Thanks a million.
Pleasure.
Thanks a lot, Mark Lawrenson on the line there, picking through all things Liverpool in the main, but also plenty to say as well around the other clubs too. It'll be a fascinating start. I really can't wait for that Liverpool-Leeds game on Saturday evening. And by the way, the Premier League returns to Off the Ball, live and exclusive Premier League commentary on the show this Sunday, kicking things off with an absolute bang. Two live games will be with you right through the season as well. West Brom against Leicester City. 2 o'clock start there, Stephen Doyle and Kenny Cunningham and Judy for that. And then Tottenham and Everton from 4:30. Nathan Murphy and Brian Kerr are going to be on duty in that. It's all with thanks to Paddy Power. I really can't wait for the season ahead. Lots of great commentary to come. It's a brand new, bizarre season, but it's upon us. And we can't wait for it here off the ball. Two keeper comments coming in. We've Andy Mitten on the way. He's going to pick through all things Manchester United now next, including what exactly is happening with Jadon Sancho.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. More confident than United before a Europa League final. Gamble responsibly. See dunleary.net.
All right, 9:30 on this Wednesday evening. You're tuned in to Off the Ball. Text in here. Are you and Lauro having a laugh? For Liverpool versus Leeds United 2020, see the opener Liverpool v Norwich 2019. Another handy opening day for Klopp. Try getting some unbiased commentator for a change, says Martin in Clonsilla. We probably won't do that, Martin, but thanks for the comment. Nevertheless, 53106, if you've got an opinion that you want to offload this evening, we'd be delighted to hear from you, whether it's Liverpool or City or Chelsea or United indeed. We'd like to hear from you. And on that note, delighted to say Andy Mitten of United We Stand joins us on the line. Evening, Andy.
Good evening.
Jadon Sancho is back on in a big way.
Well, yeah, there's been some progress from Manchester United's side. Obviously, he's been the number one target throughout this transfer window with the club, with the manager. The other players would like to see him come. And I think Manchester United fans would like to see him come as well. The problem has been that Borussia Dortmund have not budged on their 120 million euro asking fee, and Manchester United will not pay that. And there's other side issues such as the agent's fee and the player's wages. United want his wages to fit in with the existing pay structure. At Old Trafford, there were significant problems when Alexis Sanchez came in on far more than the rest of the players. And a deal's not been done. There's still a lot of obstacles in the way. As I understand it, the player wants to join Manchester United. He hasn't pushed to leave Borussia Dortmund. He's been perfectly happy at Dortmund, where he's excelled. And we've probably got close to another month of this, and some people absolutely love it. It just fills up their life. They're obsessed by transfers. And other people find it completely tiresome and just want it to be done. And they see the deadlines which are imposed. Dortmund said, our deadline is August the 10th. That's been and gone. United paid absolutely no attention to that. United have got money to spend, but there's a nervousness about the economics of the club and football in general. Because of the COVID situation, for every game that United play behind closed doors at Old Trafford, they lose approximately £4 million in matchday revenue. They've already paid a £20 million rebate to the broadcasters. United have had a lot of success commercially with sponsors. And they're still successful, but looking forward, it's generally dependent on the health of the world economy. And if companies are contracting, then they're less likely to take out multi-million pound sponsorships with football clubs. So United have got money to spend. They've got to get rid of some of the players on the books, and they're hard to shift because they earn too much money. there's not a queue of suitors for players who've been injured too much, who've not been contributing so much to Manchester United. And the squad is quite bloated, but Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and his coaches absolutely want to improve it. They wouldn't be satisfied if there's only one player comes in, Donny van de Beek. That's a signing that's been welcomed, good price. I've spoke to a lot of people about that who know far more than I do. Probably the most relevant was Steven Pienaar, the former Everton and Tottenham player who's now a coach at Ajax. And he said that Donny reminded him of Frank Lampard as a player, but he also said he needs time to settle in England. And you shouldn't just expect him to be like Lampard in his pomp straight away. But Sancho is the one. He's the one who's dominated the headlines, continues to do so. You've got German side of the story, and you've got the side of the story coming out of Manchester as well. And as often is the case in football, there's more than one version of the truth.
Yeah, one version of it that came out this evening I saw coming from Sky, Andy, was that there'd been some positive movement. You mentioned around the various elements of it, but that there'd been some positive movement in the conversations around agent fees and personal terms. Like the monster fee itself obviously remains a massive hurdle. Is it your understanding that there's been, that the wheels are starting to grease a little bit?
That's exactly my understanding. And to add to that, United are adamant that they're not going to overpay. The comments from Agnelli at Juventus yesterday at a meeting of the ECA, where he said he expects transfer fees to be 20 to 30% down. That struck a chord with Manchester United. And a month ago, a big agent who's done some of the biggest deals in the last couple of years, he said to me, the benchmark has not been set for this transfer window. It'll be set at the top end with the first big deal, and he expected that to be Havertz from Bayer Leverkusen to Chelsea, and that happened. And throughout, Bayer was saying 90 million, 90 million, 90 million, 90 million, and when it was done, it was 62 point something million with some add-ons, which took it to just over 70 million sterling. So I think everyone in football looked at that. Well, not everybody. I'm sure, you know, Sligo didn't in the Republic of Ireland, but the top end clubs certainly did as some kind of benchmark. Football is not wealthier now. It is since COVID. Every single club has seen their revenues depleted, and United's next accounts will show a far bigger drop than the last published account. So on one level, Sancho absolutely stacks up. He's a top player. He's the right age profile. He's in a position which Manchester United want to strengthen. United do have other targets if it doesn't come off, but he is the clear number one. And I've been speaking a lot to various people and doing my job, and the understanding I get from the football side of the club, as opposed to the executive side of the club, is that we need top talent to come in here to continue the good job that Ole Gunnar's doing, to get Manchester United closer to Liverpool and to Manchester City. I wouldn't expect United to win the league this season at all, but to continue the improvement, you know, those three semi-finals, maybe become one cup, maybe two cups, maybe two finals. United are in the Champions League, so that's going to be much more difficult than the Europa League. The season is going to be more condensed. It's going to be more difficult. And United need a stronger squad, because when a weaker squad was played in those FA Cup games against Norwich and Chelsea, the difference was noticeable. So on one hand, you've got the best United 11 beating Manchester City away twice and once at Old Trafford, beating Chelsea away twice. And you can dispute what the best 11 is. It's not clear cut. It seldom is in football. But I think the point rings true that more quality is needed. And you had players last season like Andreas Pereira, who played 40 times. Jesse Lingard featured in 40 matches, and probably wasn't enough for them. But I think the coach, it was a bit too much for them, given the lack of goals and assists that those two players brought. And I think United would listen to offers for players. Several players, it's pretty obvious who those players are, ones who have not featured as much towards the tail end of the season in Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's plans. And it'd be important to get some of those players off the wage bill. They did well getting rid of Alexis Sanchez because he was an unmitigated flop for United. And I think Ollie feels he's doing a good job. He did some firefighting from what was left over from the previous manager. But then every manager says that. I can remember David Moyes saying there's a huge job to be done here. And Louis van Gaal saying, we've got to change everything here. And Jose Mourinho saying exactly the same thing. So that's what football managers do. But that third place finish was pretty positive for Manchester United last season. And I'm pretty optimistic going into next season, notwithstanding the fact that fans are not going to be able to be there initially at the start. I wrote a story today for The Athletic about how the club are meeting the local authorities tomorrow, Thursday, with their plan to get 12,000 fans in for the game against Crystal Palace on the 19th of September. I got tipped off about that 11, 12 days ago, sat on it, backed it up and wrote it when I found out the meeting was confirmed for tomorrow. But even in the time I was writing it, over the last 24 hours, the mood has darkened because of the increased infection rates nationally and specifically in Greater Manchester as well. So it's very, very complex. And this is the environment which is football at this moment and for Manchester United.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that one plays out for that Crystal Palace game and what impact today's new guidelines will have from number 10. Just in relation, I've been watching, you mentioned about Donny van de Beek and like the, I suppose, uncertainty for him. A lot of people have seen him in the Champions League, but other than that, like what, you know, sort of a player, what it is he brings. I've certainly been watching plenty of the highlight reels and you can get a an increased sense maybe of how fantastic somebody is, and it's not really based in reality. But in terms of the importance of the signings, Andy, like Donny van de Beek versus Jadon Sancho, is Sancho a more important signing for what United really need right now?
Yeah, and the price reflects that. Yeah, he's seen as being a world-class player or on the cusp of being a world-class player. And Donny, very good, ticks lots of boxes, but Sancho is the star. And this is a squad which needs stars, like former Manchester United squads. I spoke to a lot of people in Holland about Donny, because it's my job to do that. And I've watched him play live. I watched him in the best game of football I saw last year, when Ajax beat Real Madrid in the Bernabeu. Did he stand out? No. The truth is, I had 800 words to write by the final whistle, and I'm just sort of looking up and watching this young Ajax team just attack and attack and attack. It was an incredible game of football, but I wasn't scouting any individual players. And when he was on the cusp of signing, I asked a journalist, one of the top journalists in Holland, who's a good contact of mine, and he came back with some information and I put that onto social media, which was appreciated. But I also had other people going, you should know this. It's your job to know this. You're supposed to be a European football journalist, which is very true. But I don't have an encyclopedic knowledge of thousands of footballers. You know, as soon as I'm asked to hone in on one, I will do, and I'll go deep into their story. But when he signed, I spoke to lots of people at the club about him, speak to people in Holland. I mentioned Steven Pienaar. And from the United perspective, they feel he's come through a very good youth system at the best club in Holland. He's played Champions League football. His age profile fits. There's goals in him. They see him as half a striker, as like a number 10. They're not saying that he's going to come in and be like Lionel Messi. They're asking for a little bit of patience as well there. But it's hard to ask that sometimes of fans, because people get excited, and maybe if people got less excited, which is impossible to ask for, and a bit more patient, then it would work better for the players. But I can remember Memphis Depay coming from Holland, and it's a huge jump up from Holland to the Premier League. And one thing Pienaar said, which interested me, was he went from Ajax to Dortmund and then to Everton, and he felt that that middle step in Germany was a real help to his football. And you know, Depay didn't really work out when he came. Completely different personality to Donny. Daley Blind was a good player. Ruud van Nistelrooy came across and goal scorer, did fantastically well straight away. So the picture I built up about Donny is a positive one. The price looks good, £35 million. But then if you ask me to name probably who I thought would be the best signing in the last 10 years, without really seeing much of him and without it being an obvious one, I would have probably said Shinji Kagawa, because he was young. He'd been a star at Borussia Dortmund. He'd scored, he'd assisted. I just thought, this is too good to be true. He's not even expensive. Sir Alex, Mike Phelan had been to watch him, and it was too good to be true, because he struggled in England, partly because he didn't expect Sir Alex Ferguson to leave after a year, and could say the same, Robin van Persie might say the same thing, and Sir Alex Ferguson apologised to them for that. So there's no guarantees in signings. It's not an exact science, but in the main, I think Ole Gunnar's done quite well. I think he's a good judge of a player. He does a lot of due diligence. He picks up the phone himself. He calls managers. He calls players. He tries to find out if the player is a good character. Because as he told me in May, I'd rather have a hole in my team than an arsehole. And I think that's ringing pretty true. And he knows that if 30, 40, 50, 60 million is spent on a player and that player is not a success, then it knocks 10% off his approval rating, if you like. And the Manchester United manager, they've always got a level of stock. The best example in recent years might be, if you look at 2018, the start of the year, Jose Mourinho was doing really well. So well that he signed a new contract. Everyone celebrated that. January, great, great, great. February, United lost to Sevilla and played really badly. And it just went boom, 20% drop. And this isn't scientific, but I go to a lot of matches, I speak to a lot of people, you can feel it. And that season ended really badly. The summer was a disaster. The following season started badly. And by the December, he'd lost his job. Because you could just see that slide going right throughout the year. And Ollie's stock's pretty good. He's got the backing of the fans. He's seen as a good person. He's a nice person. And it'd be good if a nice person can be successful. And I think he's pushing it in the right way.
Yeah, a couple of things I wanted to touch on before we let you away, Andy. One of them being the new thirds kit that was launched during the week, and it's pretty out there. What's the reaction to it been generally?
It depends who you ask. I mean, if you ask children, I've got a brother who's 13 and he thinks it's fantastic and maybe he wants to look like a wild animal. I've not bought a kit since I've been a kid. But when I was a kid, I loved them. I was first in the queue at the superstore before it was a mega store. And it really excited me. And as a journalist, I used to get every 2 years, I'd get calls. You know, BBC One would ring me. You must be disgusted that Manchester United are bringing another kit out. And the more it went on, I thought, no one's being forced to buy these kits. When I speak to the parents who buy the kits for their kids, they're telling me that they're wearing them every single day. They're getting actually decent value out of them. Do I agree that they should be changed every single year? Not really. Three kits as well? Not really. Is it a huge deal to me? Not really. Did I like the pink kit? No. Lots of people did, though. And I said, I think yesterday, if Man United go to Real Madrid away, looking like zebras and win 4-0, everyone will see that kit in a totally different way.
Yeah. It'll be the opposite effect of the grey kit. Before we let you away, Andy, I do want to get your thoughts. The Ole Gunnar Solskjaer been a little bit busy, but maybe not as much as United fans would like. Casey Stoney, the other, has been very busy. Tobin Heath, a big deal in the game, a double World Cup winner, and a big deal. Do you feel for United side of work to do, maybe to bridge that gap to the top three in the Super League?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think Manchester City have been buying bigger names, and Manchester United cannot be left behind. Their average home attendances are pretty similar. There's a couple of thousand going to the regular games. And then when games are played in the main stadium. There was a huge crowd for the Manchester Derby a couple of years ago when City entertained United. The salaries for some of the women's players are still very, very low compared to the men. But as you say, a double World Cup winner. United are very satisfied with the progress that the women's team are making, with Casey Stoney as a person, as a coach. When she came to do the presentation for the interview, almost immediately the club said, we've got our one here, this one's a keeper, and she's very highly rated. You're seeing quite a lot of talent moving towards England now. Mm. And I know a friend of mine looks after one of the ladies who plays for Barcelona, and he was sort of sounding me out, and I said, look, it's not really my area. And I took from that conversation that England is becoming a more attractive place for the top female footballers, and City have signed well. United have been doing the same, and good. It's great. You know, there's people who now go to all the women's matches. They enjoy it. I don't think the stadium's ideal. It's 12 miles outside of Manchester. It can be quite a desolate place, even though the facilities in the actual stadium are fine. But if it was in the middle of Manchester, I think that would be much better. Yeah. And I've seen the top of the women's game. I've been to Lyon. I went to Lyon to interview Raphael, who's just moved to Istanbul. And he said to me, because my flight was cancelled, he said, the women's team are playing tonight. Why don't you come to the game with me? And it was a big Champions League game, and there were 11,000 people there, and all the first team and the men's team were there. And it was a big deal. You know, I felt it, getting the tram to the ground in Lyon, who were the best team in the world in the women's game. And they've been the most successful team, and the teams in England are not at that level yet, but it's definitely moving in the right direction.
Yeah, interesting to see, and we will definitely watch it with interest, increasing interest as well. Andy, thanks a million.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Andy Mitten on the line from United with Sam. Take a quick break. Football on Off the Ball. With Paddy Power. More confident than United before a Europa League final. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.